Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, we've got a lot to cover today. We're going to start out with Dan Gaynor, the T. Boone Pickens Fellow and Vice President of the Business and Media Institute. In our second hour, Andrew Gause, the author of The Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cook's The Books, will be with us. In our third hour, Dr. Ravi Batra is going to drop by, plus Dennis Van Rockel, the newly elected president of the National Education Association. So a lot of good stuff going on. Dan Gaynor. Businessandmedia.org is the website. T. Boone Pickens Fellow and Vice President of the Business and Media Institute and conservative extraordinaire. Hey, Dan, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be back. Sorry, I had to require a voice, and that was a little difficult last week.
Oh, no problem, Dan. No problem. I understand it well. I'm curious, first of all, we have apparently a major economic indicator here. There have been some responsible reportage on the plight of New York-based strippers during the Wall Street crisis of late. It seems that high-end customers have been lighter lately, and the tips have been coming in smaller denominations. Renowned defense lawyer Edward Hayes, a self-described night owl, long ago developed two measures for gauging the ups and downs of Wall Street, the Heggy and Hesse, high-end girlfriend index and high-end stripper index. And apparently both are down, but the strippers are really, he says, the strippers are getting killed. It's terrible. It really started in the last month. What they really needed, the guys to go in and spend $500, and they're just not there. The economy in the tank.
Well, it certainly gives a new meaning to the term losing your shirt on Wall Street.
Yeah, yes, it does.
But I mean, look, nobody's pretending that the economy is doing great, because it's not. What happens from the bailout? I mean, I think you and I could probably spend, we could get all 106 pages of the current plan, and you and I could spend about a couple years analyzing it and ripping it apart from left, right, and center, and probably neither one of us would be real happy with it. Clearly something had to be done. Everybody we talked to, any expert, frankly, conservative or liberal, says something had to be done. I don't think a lot of people on the hard end of the left or hard end of the right are happy with what is being done.
Well, let's cut right down to this. In 1999, Graham Leach bought Bliley deregulated investment banks, actually essentially created this new category of investment banks, banks that both were investment houses and banks, something that had been illegal in the United States for over 100 years, or actually since the Great Depression. And that was sort of the start, but then in 2000...
Well, no, I disagree about that. If you're going to talk about the start, let's go... it is a housing issue. So let's go back to the housing,
right.
The mortgage people, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
That's where I'm going next.
Yeah.
In 2002, rather, the chairman of the SEC, at the urging of the Bush administration, changed the regulation of the investment industry, what little regulation there was, from mandatory to voluntary. And so in 2003, the standard loan that was issued, in 2002, standard loans required verified income, verified assets. Okay. By 2003, once it went voluntary, guidelines got looser, and banks, mortgage companies, banks pretty much weren't following along at this point in 2003, went to what are called SIVA loans, stated income verified assets. You didn't have to show a paycheck stub, just state your income and prove that you had money in the bank. So if you just lost your job, you could still get a mortgage. After that, later in 2003, came stated income, state assets. You just say it. And they didn't even verify that you had a job. And they didn't even verify your assets. They simply had an accountant. They had to hire a third-party accountant, and there were people who just made a living doing this for the mortgage industry, say, yes, it's possible in that field that a person could earn that salary, and that was enough to get a mortgage. Then they went, in early 2004, And this is all as a result of the Bush administration changing the SEC rules so that it was the industry was self-regulated.
There we disagree.
These things are all outside the guidelines of regulation. Outside the guidelines of regulation, but they were no longer illegal.
You're trying to pretend that this is a failure regulation of deregulation. I would say it's a failure of regulation, because at the very heart of this problem lie Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, two government-sponsored entities operated by liberal, operated by, you know, Franklin Raines, Bush administration appointee, Jimmy Gorelick, Jim Johnson, you know, guy vetting vice presidential candidates for Barack Obama. These, you know, horribly run, scandalous, multi-billion-dollar accounting failure organizations were at the heart of all this problem. They were the first card in the House of Cards to fall. They were encouraged to, you know, basically keep pushing out. We're pushing home ownership as a society. Congress and the president agree with that. But they're out there backing this paper, getting this paper to roll through the system. They're the entities that set this all in motion. And they're the entities that were funding Congress, particularly Democratic members of the Congress, the top five people who they gave money to as presidential, as nominees for different campaigns, included the top three Democratic presidential candidates, and Chris Dodd,
four. Are you kind of missing the fact that the Rick Davis, the guy who looks so much like Jerry Dahmer, or Jeffrey Dahmer, rather, and is the campaign manager for McCain's campaign, was taking money from Fannie Mae right up until 4 weeks ago that his company was?
So he was taking money. He wasn't running it.
He took $500,000 in exchange for access to.
Right.
To, you know, I'll give you that the CEOs were screwed up, but they were screwing up also. See, in 2003, when the Bush administration was pushing this idea of voluntary rather than mandatory regulation, which meant that banks and investment houses could go outside the regulations, it also allowed Fannie and Freddie to. And George Bush thought this was a great idea. In fact, he branded it. The Republican Party branded it, put a logo on it. You know, Dan, listen to this little clip of audio. This is 1 minute of George Bush.
More and more people own their homes in America today. Two-thirds of all Americans own their homes. Yeah, we have a problem here in America because fewer than half of the Hispanics and half of the African Americans own the home. That's a home ownership gap. It's a gap that we've got to work together to close. And by the end of this decade, we'll increase the number of minority homeowners by at least 5.5 million families. And, of course, one of the larger obstacles to minority home ownership is financing. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have committed to provide more money for lenders. They've committed to help meet the shortage of capital available for minority home buyers. Freddie Mac recently began 25 initiatives around the country to dismantle barriers and create greater opportunities for home ownership.
And then he talks about how, you know, getting around the regulation, his new voluntary regulation, his ownership society. This is the core of it.
One of the programs is designed to help deserving families who have bad credit histories to qualify for home ownership loans. You don't have to have a lousy home for first-time home buyers. You put your mind to it, the first-time home buyer, the low-income home buyer, can have just as nice a house as anybody else.
Now, Dan, I'll acknowledge that this is a bipartisan problem, although I agree with Barack Obama that it reflects a Reagan-esque viewpoint that regulations are a bad thing.
But if you listen to what he's saying, and I mean, I'm happy to blame Bush. Bush running to the left was a failure every time he did it. I'm happy to, more than happy to say that.
Well, this wasn't to the left, actually.
But
what this did is it enormously inflated the profits of Wall Street and the banks. This was Bush moving to the side of his donors. This was stuff that was lobbied for by the banking and mortgage industries. And you know it as well as I do, Dan.
NAACP, Congressional Black Caucus.
No, they were pushing for something quite different. What they were pushing,
community reinvestment.
If you go back and you look at the language during the Clinton administration and even all the way back to the Carter administration, what Democrats had been pushing for was an end to redlining, was equal standards for credit based, you know, that were not based on zip codes or race. I mean, they were using very similar language, but what the Democrats were asking for was crack down on these banks, more regulation, enforce the anti-discrimination laws. And the Republicans were saying, cool, we can accomplish that. The best way to do that is to make the regulation voluntary. And that's what they did in 2002. And that brought us, I mean, you know, Cox just did away with voluntary regulation 3 weeks ago.
But remember, you're leaving out all the regulatory aspects of this. The Fed, which I'm more than happy to blame Alan Greenspan, had blamed him before, keeping interest rates artificially low. The Fed,
right, to help get George Bush reelected in 2004.
Fed, he certainly did it before this too. The Fed trying to
all the way to the beginning. Every time a Republican was running for office, Greenspan drops interest rates. When it's a Democrat, he jacks them up.
Fed artificially boosting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the implied guarantee that we all know was a bogus implied guarantee. It was a flat-out guarantee. So what you had
The privatization of Freddie and Fannie by Lyndon Johnson was a terrible mistake.
They were never private, though.
I know. It was a semi-privatization. It was a terrible mistake. I absolutely agree with you on that regard. And Johnson did that to try to hide the cost of it because the Vietnam War was getting out of control in terms of cost. And that's a stain on Lyndon Johnson's record. But, I'm not trying to make partisan points with this. I think that there are some areas here where we agree on these things.
Yeah, I'm pleased to say that there are. I think the difference where we disagree is you say it's a failure of deregulation. I say it's a failure of government regulation.
Yeah, yeah. And it's ultimately going to be to the American people to figure out.
And pay for it. But not
yeah,
that
and pay for it, tragically. Dan Gaynor, businessandmedia.org. Thanks, Dan.
Okay, thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This month is big for the folks at General Motors. They're celebrating their first century of being in business. Imagine that, 100 years. As part of this anniversary, they revealed the future of transportation, the Chevy Volt. An extended-range electric car targeted to roll out in 2010. It's a glimpse of what's to come from General Motors as they begin their second century. The Volt will change the way we drive. How? It uses electricity. Volt is the first step toward completely reinventing the automobile. While they're working on the Volt, they're still doing everything they can to help us use less and less gas. Take the 2009 Saturn Aura. It offers EPA-estimated 33 miles to the gallon on the highway. It's one of 18 models that offers 30 miles to the gallon or better on the highway based on 2009 EPA estimates. GM has more models that have an EPA-estimated 30 miles per gallon or better on the highway than any other manufacturer. Learn more about the many ways that GM is helping us use less gas at GMNext.com. That's GMNext.com.
Waking you up on the left side of the bed.
They might as well have put Charlie the Star-Kissed Tuna there. And for her to go, sorry, Charlie. I don't know Charlie.
With Carl Wolfson and friends.
If the American people are willing to let themselves be fooled again.
Live in the banks of the Willamette River.
And end up again with higher unemployment, more people without health insurance, more foreign policy debacles.
It's Carl Wolfson.
Oh, I can see the missile coming. Thank you, Charlie.
Morning 6 to 9. AM 620 KPO.
Hey, Carl Wolfson. In the 2000 election, it was the hanging Chad. In 2004, it was keeping people from the polls. This year, Republicans are counting on poor vision to steal the election. Before filling out your ballot, make sure you get your eyes election certified at Eyes on Broadway. And if it's the Palin look you're after, you won't find it at Eyes on Broadway, but you will find hundreds of other frame styles from John Varvatos, Oliver Peoples, Paul Smith, and more. Check them out today at eyesonbroadway.com or 2300 Northeast Broadway. Whatever you need. The eyes have it.
These days it seems like we're faced with higher energy costs at every turn, as if you hadn't noticed. The same goes for natural gas. Prices are volatile because demand for energy has never been greater. And as we all try to reduce our environmental impact, natural gas has emerged as one of the cleanest energy sources able to meet our growing needs. Even electric companies rely on natural gas for power generation as a cleaner alternative to coal. So how can we meet energy demands, reduce costs, and stay environmentally focused? Well, by conserving where you can, by getting behind renewable resources, and by supporting projects like underground pipelines and LNG to increase the supply of natural gas to the Northwest. We can meet energy demands, reduce costs, and protect our environment. To learn more, go to usenaturalgaswisely.org. This message brought to you by the Northwest Gas Association.
Three cheers to the folks at Food from the Hood who are celebrating 15 years of business. Food from the Hood? Yes, Food from the Hood. It's a company entirely run by students. We handled the business aspect while producing our salad dressings straight from the garden. After L.A. felt the chaos from the riots back in 1994, students from the community decided they wanted to make a difference. They launched a company called Food from the Hood, which helps students afford to go to college. How? By producing and selling all-natural salad dressings. Our products sit on the shelves of many major retail stores across the nation and online at Amazon.com. Each flavor, whether honey mustard or creamy Italian, are low in fat and all natural, so you have nothing to lose. Loyal customers have been buying our dressing and sending us to college for 15 years. So happy anniversary to Food from the Hood. Pick up a bottle or two at your nearest retailer and help us celebrate. Want more information? Visit us online at foodfromthehood.com. That's foodfromthehood.com. Or call our office at 323-759-7000.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Past the hour, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. And let's see here. With less than a week to go before the crucial vice presidential debate, this from the wire services, GOP presidential nominee John McCain announced today that he was replacing his running mate, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, with a startled deer. According to campaign insiders, the decision to select a hoofed mammal to replace Governor Palin evolved after Senator McCain watched his running mate's performance in a series of interviews with CBS's Katie Couric. Good Lord, a startled deer could do better than that, Senator McCain reportedly said, prompting his aides to draw up a short list of startled deer. An Arizona senator supposedly brushed aside concerns that a startled deer would wilt under the pressure of a televised debate, telling aides, "At least a damn deer won't go on about Alaska being close to Russia." The McCain campaign said today that Senator McCain's new running mate, Bucky the Red Deer, would not be made available to the press prior to the debate. The McCain campaign manager Rick Davis and lobbyist for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac said, "Bucky is very much a work in progress. Right now we're working on keeping him from bolting off the stage." Bucky's opponent in the upcoming debate, Delaware Senator Joseph Biden, appeared to be today trying to manage expectations for the high-stakes face-off with his four-legged rival. "Bucky the Deer is bright, articulate, and clean," Senator Biden said. "That's storybook, man." So thanks to Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com, for that. But to the a little more serious stuff, let's look at what's going on here. In the United States, as I said, when the SEC deregulated the investment banking business, they didn't actually deregulate it. They went to voluntary regulation. In 2003, all of a sudden we got these stated income verified asset loans. In other words, you say your income and they verify your assets. Then later in 2003, it became stated income, stated assets loans. In other words, you said your income and you said your assets. Nobody checked it. Then by early 2004, we had no income verified assets. In other words, they didn't even ask you if you had a job. You just had to prove that you had some assets, money in the bank or a house or something like that, you know, a house if you were looking for a refi. And then they went to what are called NINA loans. This was later in 2004. No income, no assets. All you needed was a decent credit score. In fact, in Ohio, 23 dead people got mortgages on these NINA loans. Well, what would happen is the banks sold these things, or private mortgage brokerage houses sold these things, and typically held them fewer than 30 days, so they didn't care if they got paid off. They sold them to companies in Wall Street that were referred to as CDO houses. They were bundling these things into what are called collateralized debt obligations, CDOs. And so these companies in Wall Street, they'd be calling banks all over the United States and brokerage houses and these startup firms that the guys were bartenders a week earlier or were running a small business making videotape copies or something, and said to them, "You got some loans you want to sell me?" And so there were these boiler houses in New York City that were buying thousands of these loans. The brokers that were selling them, the guys on all in towns all over the country, the brokers who were selling these loans, if they sold a normal loan, they might make a $1,000 commission, a $2,000 commission. But if they sold a subprime loan, one of these NINA loans or any of these subprime loans that I just described to you, they could get as much as a $20,000 commission or more, depending on the value of the home. You know, a $400,000 home, they could get a $20,000 commission. They were making $75,000 to $100,000 a month, easy. Guys who had been bartenders a month earlier were making $1 million a year. So then they, because these loans, you know, because they adjust upward so steeply, so quickly, they had a higher value in the marketplace, as they were considered more profitable. So they sold them to these companies, these CDO houses in New York, who bundled them together. They'd bundle 1,000 loans together into a $100 million deal, right, into a $100 million package. And then they would take what are called tranches, which is the French word for slice. They take slices of these loans, slices of these bundles, and sell them off to investors, to this giant, what Ira Flatow on NPR refers to as the global pool of money. And the global pool of money, by the way, almost doubled. From 2000, there was about $37 trillion looking for places to park itself, to today's $60 trillion. Because so much wealth had risen to the top. The middle class was being wiped out. We were being, not just in the United States, all across Europe as well, middle class was being squeezed, credit, interest, you know, people were turning their homes into ATM machines and so on. Plus, there was new wealth being created in Japan and China, Japan, India, and China. So what happened was, by late 2006, historically, homes had the cost of homes had been 2 to 3 times their value, or 2 to 3 times income, rather. So, you know, person made $100,000 a year, they could buy a $200,000 to $300,000 house. Now people who are making $100,000 a year were buying $400,000 homes because they could do it because the first 3 years they had to pay such a low interest rate, but it would jack up. But they figured they could flip it. And now they can't flip it. And as property values are falling, Wall Street's stuck with all this stuff. So what are this, again, the result of there being no regulations. So the free market did what it does best. It came up with ways to generate the highest possible profits. To hell with the consequences to the economy, to hell with the consequences to the nation, or to the middle class, the highest profits. So where do we go now?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
It's fiber for your brain, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Okay, 4 million Americans are now within 60 days of default, right? I mean, that's the situation. 4 million Americans are within 60 days of default. And keep in mind, and here's the real indicting statistic. 62% of all the people who got these lousy loans, these loans that jack up, 62% of them qualified for a standard loan, for a normal fixed rate 15, 20, 30-year loan. And in many cases, they weren't even told that they qualified for them. Why? Because the commissions to the guys selling them, remember that wonderful free market that's supposed to solve all our problems? The commissions to the guys selling these loans, and they were salespeople, they were not bankers. Let's be real about that, too. The commissions were much higher on these lousy loans, on these subprime loans. They made so much more money on it. They were burning $100 bills to light their cigars in Wall Street, literally, and buying $1,000 bottles of champagne. So there's all these bad loans out there. There's all this toxic money out there. Turns out it's about 300 and change billion in the U.S. that we've been able to identify so far, about 200 billion and change in Europe, and only about $14 billion in change in Asia. They didn't make the mistake we made. So what are the Europeans doing, given that they're in a hole just about as deep as we are? Well, last night, over the weekend, Bradford and Bingley, a big bank, in fact, the largest bank that was loaning money to people who wanted to go into the real estate business, who wanted to become landlords, was going bankrupt. So the UK nationalized them. The government bought the bank, which means that they're firing the management. They're saying, sorry, no more million-dollar salaries, no more golden parachutes, no more nothing. We own the bank now. We're going to run it like a bank. If it needs a little extra money, we got some extra money. And when this thing is profitable again, then we'll sell it back into the private sector. In Luxembourg, in Belgium, and in the Netherlands, another sort of an investment bank, Fortis Group, same thing. Exact same thing happened. Only the government didn't buy 100% of it. It's buying large chunks of it. The governments of these three countries. It's called partial nationalization. So what's happening in Europe is the government simply saying, okay, we'll buy the banks, we'll fire all the bozo executives, and we'll run these things. We'll put cash into them. And here in the U.S., we're pumping cash into the system. The Fed just doubled their swap lines to $620 billion, a lot more money going into the system, liquidity in the system. But the bottom line is they're not saying, oh, we've got to give these banks all this money. You know, for example, Bush, Pelosi, Reid, and tragically, Bernie was right. This has become the Bush, Pelosi, Reid bailout bill. The bill says, they say that they're limiting executive compensation to $500,000 a year. It's either $400,000 or $500,000. I've heard two different versions. I haven't read the thing yet. In fact, the way it works is right now, if you're a company, if you're a bank, you can deduct from your income taxes, from your corporate income taxes, up to $1 million in compensation for your CEOs. So this is any company in America. This was an attempt. This was put into law a decade ago or so as an attempt to limit corporate excess CEO compensation. So all they do is figure out ways around it. And instead of paying them, you know, either they will pay them over $1 million and pay taxes on it, or they'll pay them $1 million and give them $20 million in stock options, or pay them $1 million and give them $5 million with a corporate jet and a villa in France and this and that, you know, and give them all kinds of stuff, other forms of compensation, which in many cases they don't have to pay income tax on, or they pay capital gains tax on or dividend tax on, which is only 15%. So what this bill does is it reduces that $1 million cap on deductibility to the corporation down to $400,000 or $500,000. That doesn't mean that the companies can't pay their executives $1 million. It doesn't mean they can't give them a $20 million golden parachute. It doesn't mean anything like that. I find this thing just so wrong. You know, I think this is a top-down solution, which is, of course, is what you would expect coming from the Bush administration. And it's going to do is buy time. The Republicans are trying to buy enough time to make it to the election so John McCain can be president, and the Democrats are going along with it. If they really, and unfortunately the Democrats don't have the power or the will to push through a bottom-up approach, which would be to say, okay, we will do, see, what they're doing right now is what Herbert Hoover did in 1931, bail out the banks. It didn't work. Within 24 months, virtually all the banks in the United States were bankrupt, and FDR had to declare a bank holiday and for a couple of days simply closed every bank in America. And then went in and basically said, okay, you know, we run your bank now. We're going to buy from you all these bad mortgages. You're going to give us all these bad mortgages at absurd rates. These, because back then it was mostly 5-year notes with a balloon payment at the end, and that's what was catching people, because again, there was a housing boom from 1921 to 1927, and it burst in 27, and that's what led to the Great Depression in large part. And there were all these bad mortgages out there, and FDR said, you give us the mortgages, we're going to turn them into fixed-rate 30-year mortgages at 3%, and people will pay us. And people paid the government back. And the government actually, over a 30-year period, made a good profit on that thing. People were still paying those things off in the early 1960s. That program unwound in the 60s. And that's what we should be doing right now. Now, the claim against this is that, well, that's rewarding the people who got the bad mortgages. And that's true. But the question is, if we're going to, if in order to save the system, because the guys who are making $1 million a year, and in some cases $1 million a month, selling these bad mortgages, have already taken the money and run. And the voluntary deregulation, the voluntary voluntary regulation, rather, that the SEC did, this four-year experiment in voluntary regulation, is already blown up in our face. So we have a choice. We can reward Henry Paulson's friends, the chairman of Goldman Sachs and the chairman of all these various companies. We can reward them for their thievery, or we can reward the people who took the subprime mortgages, a few of whom did it fraudulently. If some, you know, folks learned that they could go in and they could get a mortgage with no income and no assets, they just did it. But I don't understand why they would do it over the long term. I understand there were some, there were a lot of people who were speculating. They bought a house based like this, thinking they could fix it up and turn it around a month later and sell it for, you know, $5, $10, $20,000 more. In fact, there was TV shows, Flip This House, remember that? Encouraging this. So a lot of people got stuck, a lot of people who thought that this was going to be their new business. And we would be bailing those people out, no doubt about it. But frankly, I'd rather bail people out at the bottom, people who were not, they didn't engineer the system, they didn't lobby for the system, they didn't crank the system up. Bail out the people at the bottom. You put the money in at the bottom. You take over these mortgages to convert them all to fixed 30-year notes at a 5% interest rate, and create a government agency to buy the property from them and resell it if they can't do it, and give them the first right of purchase as the values go down. Let's do it at the bottom rather than the top. And then at the same time, as I said last week, and you'll find it as the top story Thursday on commondreams.org, among other places, let's put a step tax into place, a securities transaction tax. Every time you buy or sell a stock, you pay a 0.25% tax on the value of that stock or that credit swap or that derivative or that whatever it may be, to discourage this kind of insane speculation and to encourage investment. Very simple, very straightforward. So, anyhow, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Also, you'll find a link there to our Air America page, the Tom Hartmann page on Air America, where you can see our live free streaming video, our free chat room, free message boards, free streaming audio, free everything. David in Los Angeles. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Hi. Three things I wish that Obama had answered this way in his debate about the credit crisis, which also, of course, pertains to your guest. In the face of falling earnings, credit was substituted for earnings in order to float the consumer.
Right, over the last 20 years.
And that's the of course, the real cause of the so-called crisis. Mm. And the real solution would be
raise earnings.
To raise earnings, of course.
Yeah.
But their solution is more debt.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. This is not rocket science, David, and well said. Absolutely. Martin in Indiana. Hey, Martin, what's up?
Hey. Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm on the air. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Martin.
Excuse me. So, well, I have to rethink what I was about to say because your last comments, you took the words out of my mouth, the trickle up rather than trickle down. So let's put it this way. By the way, one thing is that is not rewarding the people with bad mortgages. They're not getting rewarded because they're...
Well, they're getting bailed out. Let's use the word bail out. But I can tell you that reward is the word that the Republicans will use to say, well, what, you're giving money to middle-class people instead of billionaires?
So here's the first thing. When we talk about the Republicans, we've got to actually take our language back. These people are liars. These people are robber barons. They're social Darwinists. They pretend to be religious, but their entire view of life is doing everything they can to take power and wealth, and there is no trickle down.
Yeah, no, Martin, you're right. This is greed is good on steroids, and it's a destructive thing. You know, we haven't mentioned the debates. I should have mentioned the debates. I thought Barack Obama did brilliantly in the debate, and I'll tell you why after the break, and we'll pick up some more of your phone calls. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program helping you win the water cooler wars.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartmann program at HartmannRadio.com.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartmann, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
There's one piece of legislation before Congress that scares big business more than any other. The Employee Free Choice Act. Walmart even held illegal closed-door meetings, telling its employees not to vote for candidates that support the Employee Free Choice Act. They don't want to pay fair wages, provide comprehensive health care, or strong retirement security. John McCain opposes the Employee Free Choice Act. Barack Obama supports it and wants to give workers a voice on the job. Go to Teamster.org for more information.
Why do I take non-drowsy Claritin? I love watching my son play soccer. But when allergies hit, I sneeze and my eyes get itchy and watery. Claritin relieves all my worst symptoms without drowsiness. So when he scores a goal, I know I won't miss it. And only non-drowsy Claritin is clinically proven to make me as alert and focused as someone without allergies.
Get Claritin Clear with non-drowsy Claritin. Powerful relief from all your worst allergy symptoms without drowsiness.
Stay alert. Stay focused. Live Claritin Clear. Indoors and out.
Use as directed. Only brand clinically tested.
Ed Schultz.
If you want to continue the next 8 years of GOP policy of ignoring science, then this, of course, is going to be your candidate.
Noon to three.
Last night, she propped out her family in somewhat of a shameless manner and used her infant child as a physical and metaphorical prop last night. You can't deny that.
The Ed Schultz Show.
She wants you to know that parents of special needs children all over the country will have a friend in the White House.
Noon to three.
Does that mean that they're going to get health insurance? That needs some interpretation.
AM 620 KPOJ.
The nation's first student-managed company, Food from the Hood, is celebrating its 15-year anniversary. Buying their salad dressing sends a student to college. Profits are used as scholarships for the hardworking students involved in the Food from the Hood entrepreneurship program. You can find their low-fat, all-natural honey mustard or creamy Italian at major retail stores and online at Amazon.com. What are you waiting for? Send a student to college today. For more information, visit foodfromthehood.com or call 323-759-7000.
I'm Tom Dwyer, consistent supporter of Tom Hartman's national and the KPOJ morning shows. Lately, I'm hearing a lot of companies tout how green they are. While I'm excited to see any movement in an environmentally positive direction, I'd like to remind you that Tom Dwyer Automotive Services has been providing award-winning service, environmentally sound methods, and sustainable business practices from the beginning, long before greenwashing became the current marketing hype. Green label products and services don't make a green business. We like to offer our clients choices that reduce their environmental impact. Here's a suggestion. Rather than choosing a price point recycled oil change or an additive, consider switching your vehicle to synthetic oil. Synthetic oils reduce our country's dependence on crude oil and are superior to conventional oils and additives. Synthetic oils are better for your vehicle, providing superior lubrication and longer service intervals. And that's better for you. More miles between oil changes means less of your valuable time chasing oil changes. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, 503-230-2300. Keeping your vehicle safe, breakdown-free, and operating at their best. Please check the detailed client testimonials on our website at tomdwyer.com.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
Why spend more than you have to on your life insurance? Did you know that term life insurance rates have fallen over 60% in the last 10 years? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. At AccuQuote.com, we monitor the rates, features, and financial strength of hundreds of life insurance products. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can protect his family with $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $19 a month. Female rates are even lower. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life policies that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Why not find out how much you can save? Write down this number and call today for your free quote. Call 800-500-2171. One five-minute call is all it takes. 800-500-2171. That's 800-500-2171.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Okay, my thoughts on the debates real quickly. I thought Barack Obama did a brilliant job 9.5 minutes before the hour. By the way, welcome back. Truth in Broadcasting. I thought he did a great job. He one of the things that he had to do was keep in mind that a lot of people, for many Americans, this debate was the first time that they'd seen Barack Obama. They have they're you know, you and I may be political junkies or information junkies. Most Americans are not. They're watching sports. They're working. They're watching, TV game shows, whatever. So this might have been their first introduction. And all they've heard is the Republican memes of angry black guy or is he a Muslim and all these weird things. And so really, I think all he had to do was come across as reasonable and presidential. And I thought he came across as Kennedy-esque. I thought it was a good thing that he didn't bloody John McCain. I thought, you know, I thought that and he certainly had many opportunities to let his surrogates do it. I thought he did a great job. And in fact, my blog today over at TomHartmann.com and also on the Air America page at AirAmerica.com, MSNBC's Chris Matthews on Friday said that Barack Obama was elite in part because he was wearing sunglasses. This is Matthews' exact quote. He says, can Barack Obama, a man of elite education, if not elite background, say what, Chris? Elite background? His mom on food stamps? Anyhow, Chris has been, anyway, break into the middle class and talk regular. Can he talk to, this is a guy who just paid off his student loans. Can he break into the middle class? Can he talk to regular people in their kitchens tonight, in their living rooms? Everyone thinks Barack is too cool. In other words, there he is with shades getting on the plane, a little too elegant, a little too proud of his own bearing. Uppity? Is that a problem, that he's just too cool for words? In other words, elite? Now, that's Chris Matthews' take. Chris, you're wrong. You know, I love you, but you're wrong. We love our elites. America loves our elites. We love sports stars. We love movie stars. We love rock stars. We even love our political stars. John Kennedy was an elite. He actually came from an elite family, unlike Barack Obama. He shared with Obama an elite education, and he had the calm demeanor and good fashion of a man who knew he was part of the intellectual and political elite. Americans didn't just love him. They lionized him, calling his administration Camelot, which is the story of an elite king in an elite time, as you may recall. If George W. Bush has taught us one lesson, it's that the god-awful consequences of having the guy you want to have a beer with running the most complex, powerful, and massive institution in the world, the U.S. government, is a terrible mistake. John McCain graduated from the Naval Academy of June 1958, fifth from the bottom, 894th out of 899. He has no training at law. Sarah Palin attended five schools before getting a degree from North Idaho College that qualified her to be a TV sportscaster. North Idaho College, by the way, takes pride in its open-door admission policy. She has no training at law. Most of our great presidents have been trained in law, from John Adams, who was only marginally great, to Thomas Jefferson, to Lincoln, to FDR, and Clinton. Bush and Cheney have no legal training, and we've been told how great the MBA presidency would be. It's been a disaster. Joe Biden and Barack Obama both have doctor's degrees in law. Neither John McCain nor Sarah Palin have ever been trained in constitutional law. It's time, frankly, for an elite presidency. It's time for the best and brightest to once again lead this nation. And we're going to do a contest here for give away a copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, one of my favorite books that I've written, out of the 19 books I've got in print out there. We got a new one coming out in a couple of months, by the way. I've been working like crazy over the weekend. I'll tell you about it later. But a copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, to whoever writes the you know, my favorite, the most interesting, Sean Broeker Ankle. She's kind of off duty today, or partial duty. So I'll make the call on this one. Blog post over at TomHartmann.com. What do you think? 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Eddie in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Eddie, listening on KMNY, our new 50,000-watt affiliate there in Dallas. What's up, Eddie?
Yeah, and we're loving it.
That's great. I'm so glad you're listening. I'm so glad that that station's on the air. So what's up?
Yeah. I'm not a gambling man, and I know you're not either, but how much you want to bet that Sarah Palin will not show up for the debate on Thursday?
I wouldn't take that bet, although I do think that she will show up. And I think that... if you go on YouTube, you can find some videos of her debating during the gubernatorial race in Alaska, and she's actually a very competent debater. She's very good. She's particularly very good at dodging questions. So I would not underestimate her. As badly as she did with Katie Couric, That was a different environment. I suspect she will show up, and I suspect that she'll make a respectable standing. So I wouldn't write her off altogether. John in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, John.
How you doing, Tom?
Good, but I'll get better.
Yeah. What I wanted to talk about is what's primarily happening, what I'm seeing on the right here, and this race baiting on the economic crisis.
Yeah.
People like Michelle Malkin, Ann Coulter, Neil Cavuto, basically blaming minorities for the problem.
Yep.
When in reality, minority representation or the amount of minorities that have taken what they consider risky loans is only 3.5% to 4.5%.
Right. The majority of these subprimes are owned by white middle class people.
Exactly. And what's being done here is they're trying to race bait this and blame it on minorities, you know, when majority, like you said, of white people own these loans. But right. what I tend to see is majority of the problem, in my opinion, is or who we should blame would be mortgage brokers and real estate agents. I mean, what happened here in the Charlotte housing boom in the last couple of years has been these real estate agents and mortgage brokers basically telling honest, hardworking folks that, hey, we'll give you this teaser rate. We'll give you all these incentives to take this adjustable rate mortgage. And in a couple of years, you'll be all right. You'll just be able to refinance this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, John. And the problem is they've taken the money and run. They're back working as bartenders, you know, with $1 million in the bank. That's the problem. By the way, we're going to do our contest just based on the best blog over at the Air America website, airamerica.com, for my Bring Back the Elites blog, the best comment. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program. An autographed copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, 130-page illustrated history of the United States, or of democracy in the United States, to the best comment over at airamerica.com on my blog. Should be fun. Okay, here's where we're at right now. Here's Gordon Gekko, Michael Douglas. Remember Wall Street? Remember that movie? Michael Douglas.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind, and greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Thank you very much.
There you go. Greed is good. The ultimate statement and the defining paradigm of the Reagan administration. Andy Gause is with us, a monetary systems expert and author of The Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. His website, AndyGause, GAUSE.com. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Your take on this bailout.
Hey, how come Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac get in a little bit of trouble, we take them over, and the Federal Reserve Bank of New York gets in trouble, and we give them a $700 billion check? I think we should nationalize the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, take its assets, put it into receivership to the Secretary of the Treasury.
I think we should nationalize the entire Fed, Andy.
Yeah,
the entire Fed.
Yep. Well, the other banks don't.
Let's own our money again.
That's right. You know? That's absolutely right. The other banks don't do near as much damage as the Fed of New York. By itself, it's responsible for over 70% of the monetary creation in this country.
Wow. I didn't realize that they broke out that disparately. But I, you know, I've been calling for a long time to federalize the entire Fed. Why is it that in the UK you've got a major bank that failed overnight or over the weekend, and so, you know, what happens? They go in and this is Bradford and Bingley. The UK goes in and says, okay, we own the bank now.
Yeah,
we're taking it over. We're replacing the $5 million and $10 million a year executives with 70,000 pound a year, very, very competent bureaucrats who understand banking inside out because they've been regulating banks their entire lives. They're going to run this thing until it's profitable, and then we'll sell it back out into the private sector at a profit. The same thing happens in the Benelux countries, in Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands. With Fortis, which is more of an investment bank kind of company, and all three of these companies come in their respective nations buy up a large, in each case, a majority share in that company to keep it in business. Why don't we simply buy these companies and fire, and just take these CEOs who have and all the senior executives who have been milking this thing and throw their asses out on the street?
No, that's the way to fix it, Tom, right on the head. In fact, this is what I've been advocating for the last couple of weeks as folks have asked me about this bailout. The reality is that instead of merely writing a check and not getting anything in return, at very least, we should take control of these institutions. Whether we ever spin them off or sell them again remains to be seen. But at very least, the Federal Reserve should be, primarily the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, should be in the Treasury.
Yeah, yeah. No disagreement there. That's interesting. I also proposed Thursday of last week. You can find it at the at commondreams.org. It was the top story on the Thursday blog, and which they show a week's worth over at commondreams.org. And it was also tomhartman.com, and it got spammed all over the internet. That we do the same thing the UK has done, and that we did from 1914 to 1966. We also did to finance the Spanish-American War and the Civil War, and that's a STET tax, S-T-E-T. In the UK, it's called a securities turnover excise tax. We call it here a securities transaction excise tax. And this is a 0.25% tax on the purchase or sale of any kind of security, stocks, bonds, credits, default swaps, derivatives, anything like that. And what it, number one, it would immediately generate $150 billion a year in revenue, so Wall Street could pay for its own bailout. Number two, it would increase the viscosity very, very slightly of the system, of this whole system of buying and selling stocks. Not to an unreasonable point. In Taiwan, it's 0.3% right now. They just dropped it from 0.6. In the UK, it's 0.25, which is what I'm suggesting for the United States. There's 20 other nations, major developed nations, that have STET taxes. And what it does is it encourages investment. It encourages buying stock for the long term because you believe that stock's going to appreciate, rather than speculation, rather than constantly flipping stocks every day and, you know, trying to ride the market up and down, which just increases market volatility and causes stock prices to get disconnected from their underlying asset values.
Absolutely right. In fact, it would stop some of this speculation. People wouldn't buy stocks unless they were going to keep them for a while, just on the basis of that.
Yeah.
And it certainly would put a heavy cost on these manipulations. You know, you're going to start moving stock around and have to pay this extra tax for that purpose. I think it's a great idea, and certainly one that is long overdue.
Yeah, I'm just proposing that we go back to the level at Roosevelt. When Roosevelt came into office, the STET tax was around 0.1%. He raised it up to 0.25, and it stayed there until 1966.
Right.
And we, you know, we did just fine, thank you very much. We built the largest industrial economy in the world with that.
That's right. And if, you know, the other thing that happened right around the same time was the privatization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You know, this was the first time that they actually became, a private entity.
Right, semi-privatization.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was LBJ did that in order to hide the cost of the Vietnam War, which was just a god-awful mistake on his part. And
they've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the idea of, you know, we don't need the American people along with us in any war or that type of incursion. If we can somehow finance it without asking them to sacrifice, then they really have nothing to say. And that's really the attitude that's been permeating government since Lyndon took those moves.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking to Andy Goss, G-A-U-S-E. Andy Goss, .com, his website. He's the author of The Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. Andy, Michael Moore this morning of all people, has published, well, I shouldn't say of all people, I think it's absolutely consistent with his worldview, and mine as well, has published a piece calling this the biggest bank robbery in the history of the world. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, that might remain to be seen. It is a pretty big bank robbery. Certainly the people that thought they controlled some of these other institutions are quickly finding out, you know, who the real players on the street are. J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and Citigroup, as the three primary owners of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, are also, curiously, the primary beneficiaries of all this thievery that's going on. So it's probably a pretty good characterization.
Yeah, I thought the article in the New York Times pointing out that AIG, who we bailed out, we kind of bought out and bailed out a couple of weeks ago at Hank Paulson's suggestion, that the company that would have probably gone down if AIG went down, the company,
right,
was Goldman Sachs.
That's right.
Which Hank Paulson used to be the CEO of, and made $700 million from.
Right.
So,
and the current president of the New York Fed is former chairman of, I mean, the current chairman of the New York Federal Reserve Bank is also former chairman of Goldman Sachs.
Right. And we should also note that Robert Rubin is the former chairman of Goldman Sachs, who was Bill Clinton's big advisor, you know, money advisor, and at a certain level is one of the people that Barack Obama is listening to. And I don't have a problem with him listening to a variety of opinions. I just hope he just doesn't latch onto that one.
No, indeed not, because if you recall, Robert Rubin was before Congress imploring us to bail out Mexico, which I think at the time cost us $50 billion. And the logic was that, you know, it would cause a financial panic and a collapse and that sort of thing. Well, history shows us that, again, the prime beneficiary of that Mexican bailout was Goldman Sachs, because they're the ones that were owed all the money by Mexico.
And Carlos Slim, you know, bailing out Mexico basically threw the whole Mexican economy, the economic structure, up in the air, and a few people caught the pieces. Carlos Slim now owns over 30% of all the companies listed in terms of dollar value or peso value listed in the Mexican Stock Exchange.
Yeah,
one guy
Carlos
owns a third
Slim
of the.
Is Mexico?
Yeah, he's the richest guy in the world,
yes,
not just in Mexico. And a lot of that can be tracked back to that bailout and the structural readjustments that were associated with it.
That's right. And having the inside knowledge of that made him quite a wealthy man.
Yeah, he's done very well. Amazing. Well, Andy, it's good to hear my thoughts validated by somebody who knows what he's doing and makes a living doing it. You know, with regard to finance, I appreciate you dropping by.
Thanks, Tom. My pleasure.
Andy Goss, andygause.com, his website. Uncle Sam bails out Wall Street. Who bails out Uncle Sam? Hell of a good question. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Show. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. By the way, enjoy Dead Bodies. I got a story to tell you right after this break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yee-haw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
A big name in anti-aging right now is Dr. Arthur Perry. He's been all over TV. He's heard on radio. He has a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue. Here's the twist, though. Dr. Perry is a plastic surgeon, but he likes to have his patients try a cream called Night Skin before they go schedule their procedures. Night Skin goes on while you sleep. It supports natural collagen and elastin production. So when you use Night Skin, it reduces the appearance of your fine lines. It makes your skin smoother. It even fades away those unwanted brown spots that come with age. Dr. Perry says many of his patients call off their procedure appointments after using Night Skin because they're that happy with the results they see in the mirror. Now Dr. Perry's Night Skin is available for anyone to get risk-free. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003. Call right away for your risk-free trial of the Night Skin Anti-Aging Cream. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003.
The scent is patriotic.
Fred Thompson was drunk, by the way. Did anybody notice that?
Randy Rhodes.
Fred Thompson was plowed. He was so freaking drunk. And Bush, what was he on? It's like a pharmaceutical convention more than any other thing.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
Oh, what are they doing? Scotch, right, yeah.
3 to 6.
You know, I'd like to know what they're on. Because I'm down to like Excedrin PM and a beer every third month.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
And 620KPOJ.com.
Portland's progressive talk station.
What is it about the Northwest that makes it so livable? Balance, for one thing. We cherish our natural surroundings, yet we also understand that a modern economy requires reliable, affordable energy. There's no simple answer to this challenge. We need to conserve where we can, develop our renewable resources, and make better use of clean-burning fuels like natural gas. But this transition won't happen overnight. As we move away from coal-powered electricity to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, the demand for natural gas is increasing and putting pressure on prices. To help stay competitive, we need to bring in more natural gas supplies, including liquefied natural gas. LNG is simply natural gas supercooled to a liquid so it can be stored and shipped cost-effectively. The fact is, LNG isn't new to the Northwest. Several facilities have operated here safely for decades. Learn how natural gas can serve as a bridge to a clean energy future at usenaturalgaswisely.org. This message brought to you by the Northwest Gas Association.
Right now, there are tremendous opportunities available in commercial real estate. No matter what your need is, industrial, office space, retail, or multifamily, the National Association of Realtors wants you to know that the commercial real estate market remains fundamentally sound. When you decide to buy, lease, or invest, make sure you work with a commercial member of the National Association of Realtors, someone who is a knowledgeable and professional resource. To learn more, visit the commercial section of Realtor.org. Every market's different. Call a Realtor today.
They're all on their way. Your favorite shows. Your favorite characters.
Danny Cray.
One destination. ION Television, including the award-winning dramas Boston Legal.
Danny, you look good, right?
We look great.
NCIS and ER.
No turning back now.
Plus comedies, movies, and more this fall on ION Television. Positively entertaining.
We're on our way.
Check iontelevision.com for local listings.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
With the food pyramid, the bare necessities of living healthy are easy. So eat right, be active, and have fun.
Crazy.
You can go to MyPyramid.gov to play some games and find out more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're progressives, we're Americans. Come to party. Indeed. Well, strange stuff out there. So this is from the Los Angeles Times. Soon after Sarah Palin was elected mayor of the foothill town of Wasilla, Alaska, she startled a local music teacher by insisting in casual conversation that men and dinosaurs coexisted on an earth created 6,000 years ago. About 65 million years after scientists say most dinosaurs became extinct. After conducting a college band and watching Palin deliver a commencement address to a small group of homeschooled students in June 1997, Wasilla resident Philip Munger said he asked the young mayor about her religious beliefs. Palin told him that, quote, dinosaurs and humans walked the earth at the same time. When he asked about prehistoric fossils and tracks dating back millions of years, Palin said that, quote, she had seen pictures of human footprints inside the tracks, recalled Munger, who teaches music at the University of Alaska in Anchorage and has regularly criticized Palin in recent years on his liberal political blog called Progressive Alaska. This is a very popular notion among the current creationists. It's called the Young Earth Theory, that the Earth is only 6,000 years old and that the dinosaurs were here 4,000 years ago along with us. Speaking of wacky stuff, this would be funny if it weren't so tragic. In our newspaper here in Portland, Oregon, the Oregonian, our statewide newspaper, inserted a DVD called Obsession, the Radical Islam's War Against the West, into every copy of the Sunday paper. Turns out that they weren't the only one. Apparently about 26 to 28 million of these things have gone out to Americans all around the country. The Blue Oregon blog by Jake Okenberg, you can read it over at blueoregon.com. Enjoy dead bodies and anti-Islam propaganda? it's in your Sunday paper. And this is, you know, it starts out with the first 5 minutes shows U.S. Airlines Flight 175 plowing to the World Trade Center, dead bodies being pulled from a train bombing, lifeless, partially closed kids being carried out of the Belsen School massacre in Russia. All scored with a haunting track, and then 45 minutes of quotes, clips, and images of Muslims declaring their intent to kill all Westerners. Can you imagine this is an anti-Islam film that was sent out to 26 to 28 million Americans over the last couple of weeks by a group that is pretty much openly backing John McCain's presidency. And I think that this ties into why all of a sudden he got animated when he was talking about the threat that Iran represents during the debates. Can you imagine if somebody had sent out 26 or 28 million things about, for example, the Christian conspiracy? I mean, you could go into Montana and find a couple thousand guys who dress up in camouflage and carry guns and have a year's worth of food stashed in their houses who are right there with Tim McVeigh. There are Christian – Tim McVeigh was a Christian terrorist. There are Christian terrorists in the United States. You could find a few loony Jews. I was in Israel back when Alan Goodman – I remember it quite well. I was in Jerusalem that day, walked onto the Temple Mount and tried to put up a tent so that it could be the second temple, so that it could bring down Mashiach, and then pulled out a machine gun and killed a bunch of Muslims. Can you imagine if this video had been about the Jewish terrorists or the Jewish threat? I mean, and here's the consequence. Dayton, Ohio, America. The day after this thing was spread out in the newspapers in Ohio, tragic DVD was distributed to millions of Americans, including in Ohio, this fear-mongering anti-Islam so-called documentary. They're distributed by the millions in the swing states. There was a mosque. Most of the people attending this mosque, by the way, are Iraqi refugees, people who are here because we destroyed their country, good people who had no place to go, families. And they're at the mosque and they're praying. It's at the end of Ramadan. And somebody pumps pepper gas into the nursery. This is reported in the Dayton Daily News. Chris Rotta over at Daily Kos talks about what happened. She told me that the gas was sprayed into the room. This is one of the mothers who was there, where the babies and children were being kept while their mothers prayed together their Ramadan prayers. Panicked mothers ran for their babies, crying for their children so they could flee from the gas that was burning their eyes and throats and lungs. She grabbed her youngest in her arms and grabbed the hand of her other daughter, moving with the others to the exit of the building in the irritating substance. A paramedic said the young one was in shock and gave her oxygen to help her breathe. The child couldn't stop sobbing. This didn't happen in some faraway place, but right here in Dayton, Ohio, and to my friends. Many of the Iraqi refugees were praying together at the mosque Friday evening, people that I know and love. She tells me that her daughter slept with her last night, the little one in her arms, sobbing throughout the night. She tells me she's afraid and will never return to the mosque. And I wonder, what kind of country is this where people have to fear attending their place of worship? What am I supposed to say to them? My words can't keep them safe from what is nothing less than terrorism American style. Isn't losing loved ones, their homes, their jobs, their possessions, and their homeland enough? Is there no place where they can be safe? She didn't want me to leave her tonight, but it was after midnight and I needed to get home and write this to my friends. Tell me, what am I supposed to say to them? Well, I would say to the Oregonian, shame on you, at the very least. I'm not going to go.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Between the men running up the score. Carving up the world for the mores and the have-mores. Until there's no more in between. No more American dream. Wake me up when you learn. Wake me up when you wanna be concerned.
34 minutes past the hour. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middleists. This is Tom Hartman with you. And our voting alert for the day.
Welcome to the future. Come try our voting machine.
Well, here it is. Under the Help America Vote Act, all states have to coordinate their voter registration databases with the Social Security database. So, in other words, if you registered recently, your registration has to be coordinated with the Social Security database to make sure that you're actually a citizen and all that kind of thing. And the Social Security Administration has just shut down their database. Yeah, for 4 days. Administration, maintenance. So as John Gideon writes, if the Social Security database is down, as it will be for 4 days, they won't be able to do the processing. Across the country, processing of these voter registration forms will grind to a halt for 4 days. Why 3 weeks before the election? Even Senator Dianne Feinstein is now asking why. What the hell is going on here? And, of course, you know, I can tell you what, you know, in my humble opinion, what's going on is it's more of the Republicans. They just don't want you to vote. By the way, Meet the Press this Sunday. Tom Brokaw has taken in his effort to balance the left-wing bias of Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow and MSNBC, which apparently he's quite concerned about, setting aside the fact that Joe Scarborough does 3 hours every morning compared to their 2 hours every evening. Joe Scarborough, the right-wing Republican, nonetheless, he has turned Meet the Press into Fox News. It was so tragic. I mean, when you watch Meet the Press or Face the Nation, the anchor shows for two of the three big networks, you expect to see reasoned discourse, not a slap-down shouting match between two partisan fools. Not to say that everybody who participated was fools, but at least the shouting down part. In any case, Tom Brokaw had on Steve Schmidt and David Axelrod, first of all, about the Obama and McCain camps, reversed, Schmidt with the McCain camp. And Schmidt just constantly talked over Axelrod, shouted him down. And then he had a couple of guys on running for Congress. And the same thing. The Republicans made a complete fool of himself. And the real fool in this, in my opinion, was Tom Brokaw. He looked helpless. It was pathetic. I mean, Meet the Press has sunk to Fox News. And then he interviewed Bill Clinton, and I thought it was just tragic that, you know, keep in mind, Clinton understands this. People vote based on personality more than on issues. Even during, there's a small slice of people who will vote on issues like abortion or gun control or gay rights. You know, there's always a few. And increasingly, you know, the economy and health care, but both sides are saying they've got a solution to the economy and the health care. People vote on personality. And so Clinton comes along and he spends all this time praising the personality of John McCain and even saying Sarah Palin's great and refuses to praise the personality of Barack Obama, only endorses his issues. That was no accident. I think he's doing more harm than good, frankly. I it's just not a good thing. Brian in Dallas. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Well, I have some breaking news for you, if you're interested. They're actually voting in the House of Representatives right now.
Yep.
And the vote yay is 144, and the vote nay is 142. So this thing may not pass, which I would say would be good news, because this whole thing is one big lie.
That's very interesting.
It's a classic magic act, and I know your heart is in the right place, Tom. I can feel it just by listening to you, but I got to tell you, I feel like you're falling for the magic act.
I'm not in favor of this thing being passed, Brian.
Watch what I do with my right hand while I pull the lie off with the left hand.
Well, while I pick your pocket with the left hand is what's going on. No, I think that they should start from scratch and start over. And in the meantime, you know, if we've got some banks failing, let's buy them and nationalize them. Thanks for the tip, though, Brian. I just brought up the New York Times, and they don't have the numbers up there yet. We'll see what happens. I'll keep you up to date on that. Well said, though. Dan in San Diego. Hey, Dan.
Tom, I had a couple points, but I just want to add real quick, I agree with your take on Meet the Press. I thought it was atrocious, you know, and Bill Clinton, he just needs to be quiet, you know, if he's not going to say anything nice, be quiet.
Yeah.
But the reason I called is you talked about Obama being elite, and I have proof that he is not elite. Recall Bush saying something like, you're the haves and have-mores. Some call you the elite. I call you my base. So there's your proof Obama is not elite.
Right.
And then,
but let me add to that, though, Dan, to the extent that he has an elite intellect, to the extent that he has an elite education, which he earned, by the way, it wasn't given to him, and to the extent that he has, you know, as John Kennedy did, both of those things, I want that in a president. I'm tired of having a six-pack president.
Right. You know, I mean, like we saw what that's done for us. And then on Friday, you mentioned that the Republicans play chess and the Democrats play checkers.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, and I'd like to add something else. There's also an element of playing poker, and the Democrats are bad at playing poker as well. And, you know, in poker, one thing you do is you look for a tell, you know, something that includes that indicates the other guy is bluffing or has a good hand, and, you know, it's a giveaway. And the tell on the Republicans is bipartisanship. Whenever the Republicans call for bipartisanship, the Democrats should be on guard, but instead they just go like, yeah, we're on board with that, and, you know, that kills them every time.
Yep, yeah, well said. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. Logan in New York City. Hey, Logan.
Hey, Tom. Long time to talk. I just wanted to say I think this bailout should be tied to the resignation of the administration, and I think that you should just take it for the team.
Paulson, I mean, all these guys have been telling us all this time, everything's wonderful, the fundamentals are sound, the economy is solid, and then all of a sudden, oh, my God, the sky is falling.
Yeah, they're threatening us with the economic collapse that they engineered. They're asking us, oh, please let us hold this off until the election. And it's just ridiculous. Let them resign, and then we'll give the money up. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome very much, and very well said, indeed. Indeed. Charles in Key Largo, Florida. Hey, Charles.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, everybody's talking about, you know, the economy, and I just want to let you know that down here in the Florida Keys, we are suffering really bad. Our businesses, most of them are down either from 50 to 70% from the previous year, and I just don't see how this is going to help me as a small businessman.
It's not. It's not. I mean, if the goal is to unfreeze the credit markets, which is what they're all talking about, you know, I shared with you last week the New York Times articles from 1931 where Herbert Hoover said he needed to unfreeze the credit markets by bailing out the banks, and he did exactly what Paulson is doing right now, what Paulson, Bush, Pelosi, and Reid are doing right now. And it didn't work. It didn't work. I mean, over the short term, it got him through the elections of 1932, but then the banks all failed. It just didn't work. Trickle down. This is another form of trickle down. It doesn't work. You need to do it from the bottom up. We need to be helping people at the base. We need to increase people's purchasing power, and we need to do like Franklin Roosevelt did, and that is take over those mortgages and say, okay, we the people, the government now owns your mortgage, and it's a 30-year mortgage at a 5% fixed rate. And if you can't afford to pay it, then you know, we'll buy the house from you and resell it. But, you know, let's just deal with this straightforward. Sean in Vancouver. Hey, Sean.
Tom, you always stress the importance of framing issues. Well, obviously, the conservatives are trying to frame this issue around mortgage payments and Freddie and Fannie, which we can hammer them on endlessly if we so choose, you know, your ownership society quotes and stuff. But I think it's important that we frame the issue around what I believe is a Wall Street criminal conspiracy where they had the SEC change the leverage rules back in 2004.
Right.
Before, you could only leverage 12 to 1. Then they got that special exemption from the SEC that allowed them to go 40 to 1.
Yeah.
So, you know, your thoughts on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. And this is the point also that I made last Tuesday, I think it was, that there is, in the derivatives market right now, according to the Bank for International Settlements, $1,000 trillion worth of derivatives out there.
That's right. And they try to claim moral equivalence. They try to say that, oh well, there's enough blame to go around. But you can't begin to compare 3% of the population defaulting on their mortgages with Wall Street leveraging themselves 40 times. There's no comparison.
And $1,000 trillion. Keep in mind, the GDP of the United States is a little over $30 trillion. The GDP of the entire planet is $60 trillion. The $1,000 trillion with the derivatives, something is really seriously screwed up.
And we have a history to point to too. We have long-term capital management. We can see there's a pattern. The Mexican bailout, there's a pattern where they've criminally conspired to set up to dump this stuff on the government because they've been able to do it in the past, and now they're getting away with it right now because of their undue influence in our government.
Yeah, and the person who chronicled this so brilliantly is Naomi Klein with her book Disaster Capital.
Absolutely.
Or The Shock Doctrine, rather. But yeah, thank you very much, Sean. This is all about disaster capitalism, pure and simple. This is, you know, a bunch of Wall Street banks. Yes, something has to be done. You know, somebody in the chat room said, what if we do nothing? If we do nothing, you know, the Dow apparently is down 475. I mean, if we do nothing, there will be a crash. It may not be a disaster. In fact, it might be a healthy correction. I mean, look at what the Dow was at when Bill Clinton was elected. It was like 3,000. 45 minutes past.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
My theory is that the White House, they don't have any wordsmith A-listers working there anymore.
Rachel Maddow.
Who can take a fact and repackage it as a super fact. The guy who repackaged the let's kill all the air pollution regulations into the clear skies initiative. I bet that guy got a better job somewhere.
Rachel Maddow.
The phrase dozens of weapons of mass destruction related program activities.
Evenings, 6 to 8.
They're probably rebranding Bratz dolls for seven figures somewhere right now.
AM 620, KPOJ.
I'm Tom Dwyer, consistent supporter of Tom Hartman's National and the KPOJ morning shows. Lately, I'm hearing a lot of companies tout how green they are. While I'm excited to see any movement in an environmentally positive direction, I'd like to remind you that Tom Dwyer Automotive Services has been providing award-winning service, environmentally sound methods, and sustainable business practices from the beginning, long before greenwashing became the current marketing hype. Green label products and services don't make a green business. We like to offer our clients choices that reduce their environmental impact. Here's a suggestion. Rather than choosing a price point recycled oil change or an additive, consider switching your vehicle to synthetic oil. Synthetic oils reduce our country's dependence on crude oil and are superior to conventional oils and additives. Synthetic oils are better for your vehicle, providing superior lubrication and longer service intervals. And that's better for you. More miles between oil changes means less of your valuable time chasing oil changes. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, 503-230-2300. Keeping your vehicle safe, breakdown-free, and operating at their best. Please check the detailed client testimonials on our website at tomdwyer.com.
At OHSU, Dornbecker Children's Hospital, we have more children's specialists in one place than anywhere else in Oregon and Southwest Washington. No wonder we're the children's hospital most Oregonians trust with their child's health. Now you can help make miracles happen for Dornbecker kids just by grocery shopping. Between now and October 15th, look for products marked with the bright yellow and red Miracle Isles shelf tags. By choosing Miracle Isles products, you'll be saving a lot more than money.
Next year, Oregon businesses will see an unprecedented increase in energy costs, cutting directly into many companies' profits. Fortunately, Oregon offers the highest incentives in the country for businesses installing solar, covering up to 100% of the total system cost. Reducing your electricity bill and your carbon footprint has never provided such an attractive return on investment. Find out how you can lock in your energy rates by calling REC Solar at 888-OK-SOLAR for a complimentary site evaluation or learn more at recsolar.com/Oregon. Welcome home. Every fall, the mighty Chinook salmon make their way back home, swimming upstream in the Sandy River. Come celebrate their return at the 25th Annual Salmon Festival at Metro's Oxbow Regional Park and discover 25 things you can do to keep them coming back. Because salmon and humans need cool, clean, clear water to thrive. And we can all take simple steps to keep our watershed healthy for us all. Don't miss the 25th Annual Salmon Festival, 10:30 to 5 on October 11th and 12th at Metro's Oxbow Regional Park. Visit 620kboj.com, keyword salmon.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And who's going to be the one to say it was no good what we done? I dare a man to say I'm too young, for I'm going to try for the sun.
It's your radio support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman radio program, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Here's where the vote stands right now in the House of Representatives. The Democrats, 140 yes, 95 no. The Republicans, 65 yes, 133 no. The total, 205 yes, 228 no. This legislation is not passing. And so what's happening over on Wall Street as a consequence of that? Well, let me just, you've got to virtually update the New York Times page or, you know, one of the tickers here every second, every couple of seconds. And right now the Dow is down 513 points. It's been down as much as 650 points, 680 points, I believe. The Dow is down. But, you know, if it drops 1,000 points, 2,000 points, I don't see that as a panic, frankly. I see that as a correction. There was a very interesting interview this morning or last night, I guess it was. It was around 4 o'clock this morning. Bloomberg had I was up and watching Bloomberg out of Hong Kong, and they were interviewing the CEO of one of the largest banks in the world. I forget which one. And he said, keep in mind, this is a crisis in the financial sector. He said pharmaceuticals aren't down. Manufacturing, by and large, isn't down. He said, you know, you look at all the various sectors, and it's really, this is a crisis in the financial sector. And he said that what the American government is trying to do is bail out the financial sector. And you know, it's probably not the best way to do it. And I'm, you know, I so agree with that. Victoria Jones on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Let's get some perspective from a real reporter about what's going on in Washington, D.C., Victoria. Hey, what's going on?
Well, Deputy White House Press Secretary Tony Fratto would probably not agree with you. We had his press briefing a little bit earlier, about an hour ago, and he was urging the House to pass this bill and really was saying that this is extremely important for the health of the financial industry and really for the health of the nation.
Yeah, well, this is the Republicans' chickens coming home to roost. I mean, they put the financial services industry, particularly the mortgage industry, the SEC, into voluntary regulation in 2002, or in late 2002, early 2003. Just ended that last week, as I recall, Mr. Cox. And that voluntary regulation led to no income, no asset loans, NINA loans, and all these other things, and led to buying and reselling these mortgages with phony AAA ratings when in fact they were BBB, and tranching them out. You know, I mean, this is the chickens coming home to roost. I don't personally think that we should be bailing out these companies. I think that we should be bailing out the American homeowner. If we're going to bail out anybody, instead of doing it the way Herbert Hoover did in 1931, which is what they're proposing to do right now, which is bail out the bankers. Hoover did that in 31. It didn't work. Every bank went bankrupt within 12 months anyway, or within 18 months. Instead, we should be bailing out the homeowners, which is what Roosevelt did. When he came in and saw the failure of what of Hoover did. He declared a bank holiday, and then he took all, and there was, and it was mostly bad mortgages, by the way, Victoria, because there had been a housing bubble in the early 1920s. It started in Florida, spread across the United States. Housing costs in some areas, or housing values in some areas, were going up more than 70% a year. And that bubble burst in 1927, and it took about 2 years to work its way into a bursting of the stock market bubble. And so he simply said, okay, everybody who's got a mortgage, and at that time, the typical bad mortgages were five-year balloon payments, 5 years and a balloon payment, 5 years of interest or 5 years of interest, a little bit of principal, and then a balloon. And people couldn't pay them. And so he bought up all those mortgages and said, you now have a 30-year, 3% fixed-rate mortgage, and you pay the government. And, you know, my grandparents forward paid the government up and right up until the 1960s when the program got finally shut down. That's what we need to be doing, in my humble opinion. Are you hearing any alternatives in Wall Street or in Washington, D.C.?
No, you would think that there isn't an alternative. You would think that this is the be-all and the end-all and that this is the only thing to do. And it'll be interesting if this thing does go down to defeat to see exactly what it is that they come up with next. And it's also interesting politically that Barack Obama and John McCain have put themselves on the wrong side of this issue if this goes down to defeat.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. Although McCain has been trying to waffle, he's been trying to hedge his bets on it, and I predict that he will continue to do so.
Oh yes.
And you know, which is why we have right now. Let's see, it's still 207 to 226. They got one more vote for it, but they're having problems, both the Republican and Democratic leadership on this thing. And the other thing that they could do, I mean, here overnight in the country that you were born in, I know you're a U.S. citizen now, but in the U.K., you had, what is it, Bigley and Biddle or what?
Bradford and Bingley.
Bradford and Bingley, thank you. One of the largest banks in the U.K. failed over the weekend.
Yes.
And they failed for the exact same reason, bad mortgages in a housing bubble, you know, tail end of a bubble market. And so what did the government of the UK do? Did they go in and say, here's a pile of money? No, they said, we own you now. So, you
very
know,
very different approach.
Yeah, and the same thing. Fortis Group, you know, another financial kind of a Goldman Sachs equivalent, Fortis Group in Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands and Holland. Same thing overnight. Each one of those three countries just bought the local divisions of Fortis and said, okay, we own it now. Why don't we do that? I mean, you know, and then throw the bums out, the all of Henry Paulson's good friends and all of George Bush's big donors, throw them out on their asses and bring in some people who know how to run a bank.
You're speaking sense again.
I know. It's a dangerous thing. It's a curse. Anything, what else? We have a minute left here, Victoria. What else do you see on the horizon with regard to news around the world? What else is going on?
The only other thing that's going on is that U.S. Special Ops Forces have stopped across-border incursions and raids into the Pakistan tribal areas. They've paused ground operations just very quietly. Now, military and civilian government officials differ over why these raids have been halted, but it seems that they've been halted because of Pakistani objections. But we're being told that they've halted because they've achieved their objections.
Tell you why they've been halted. They've been halted because the Marriott got blown up.
Very likely.
You know, that was the Marriott was blown up because these people were saying, enough already, we're going to take an American icon. I mean, that was the Marriott Hotel is the American icon in Islamabad, and they took it out. And it was their way of saying, stop already. So we've stopped. It's just like, you know, when the Marines were killed in Lebanon, he says, okay, I'm out of here. Republicans are apparently good at that. Victoria Jones, talkreadynews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to our third hour. The vote is being held right now. It's 6 minutes after 2 on the East Coast, 6 minutes after 11 in the morning on the West Coast. And the vote is fairly decisively against, well, not fairly decisive. They need to come up with about 10 or 15 votes. I threw away my paper with the numbers. Here we go. Here we are. It's 207 yes, 227 no. They need 218 to get a vote, so they need to flip 11 votes. And they're slowly moving in that direction. Is this even a good idea to pass this thing? The Dow is down 500 points, which, frankly, in the history of Dow falls, is no big deal. Dr. Ravi Batra on the line with us, our favorite economist, our economic guru to our program here, the Tom Hartman Show. He's a professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, SMU, the internationally and New York Times bestselling author of Greenspan's Fraud and The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. His website, Ravi Batra, R-A-V-I-B-A-T-R-A, RaviBatra.com. Dr. Batra, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Tom. This morning when I called your producer, Sean Taylor,
yes,
I had no idea that the Dow was going to fall 500 points.
Yeah,
because they're all talking about the bailout. This is the panacea. This is the elixir for everything. And I posted an article, sent an article to Sean talking about, the title of the article is Crisis Profiteering.
Yes, I have it in front of me.
Okay. See, this is what Wall Street always does. Mm-hmm. They try to profit from every crisis, and they have been doing it since Reagan's time. At that time, they cut taxes sharply for the wealthy, and all sorts of problems started. And they benefited from those huge tax cuts. Then in the mid-80s, there was a savings and loan crisis. And the government bailed out the savings and loan, and then some of them turned healthy. Wall Street snapped the healthy ones back and again profited from it. And now they are trying to profit from this bailout, a $700 billion boondoggle. You know what this will do?
My sense is it'll harm the dollar. It throws us further into debt. By the time it's paid back, it'll be $1.4 trillion. It'll create massive inflation and stagnation, which they'll blame on the Democrats and Obama if he's elected president.
Yeah, those of course are the obvious things, but there are some other things that will be problem. Like they said that credit is freezing. That's a term they're using. We want to unfreeze the credit market, right?
Right. Right.
So why are you helping the borrowers like Goldman Sachs? They don't lend money; they borrow money. I don't understand.
So who lends money? If you wanted to inject credit, you just do that at the level of the Fed, don't you?
Well, you do it to places like Bank of America. You do it to banks.
I see. You go to the banks instead of the investment houses.
Right. Okay. They are the lenders.
Right.
Goldman Sachs is a borrower. Morgan Stanley is a borrower. They borrow money and then speculate with it in the oil market, in the market for derivatives.
Right.
And they raise those prices. They are the ones responsible for the rise in the price of oil. Now, why are you billing out places like Goldman Sachs? That I don't understand.
So we have to keep in mind that Henry Paulson took $700 million in compensation over the course of his 16 years at Goldman Sachs, or at least that's the amount of stock he owned when he cashed out. And by the way, under a neat little provision that Reagan slipped into the law, if you cash out your stock in order to go to work for the executive branch of government, you don't have to pay any income tax on the capital gain.
It occurred to me this morning when I was writing this article, Crisis Profiteering. Hmm. This Goldman Sachs is the source of the problem.
Yeah.
And they're bailing that out.
I agree. So what is, you know, in the 5 minutes we have here, what is your advice to Nancy Pelosi, Dr. Ravi Batra?
Okay, bailout banks, fine. Bailout banks. Bail out the whole.
What about nationalizing the banks? What about buying them, like the UK just did, and Luxembourg, Netherlands, and
that would be too much. I won't advocate that. Mm-hmm. But in the short time we have, I wanted to talk about the two YouTube videos I have posted.
Okay.
And they are sensational in the sense, on this debate, John McCain claimed that he is a friend of small business.
Right.
And then I found out, I discovered that in 1983, that was his first major vote. He raised small business tax by 66%. He raised the self-employment tax from 9% to 15%, which is a 66% rise in the small business tax.
Which tax was this?
Self-employment tax.
Oh, the self-employment tax.
That was the biggest rise in self-employment tax that occurred in 1983, and John McCain voted for it. That killed small business. Ever since then, that small business has been way down, and John McCain voted for it. I discovered that. I put that information on the two videos I've just posted on YouTube. Please inform your audience again and again.
Well, I think you just did, but I will mention it again.
Yeah,
do you have them posted over your website? I'll get them and put them on our website.
I sent the links to Sean.
Yeah, okay, great. We'll get them up on our website by the end of the year.
John McCain, say it again. John McCain voted to raise the self-employment tax by 66% in 1983, and until today he's claiming to be the friend of small business. I don't understand how.
Yeah, he took that tax from what to what?
From 9% to 15% in just a matter of, from Reagan to George Bush Sr., it went up from 9% to 15.3%, which is more than a 66% rise.
This is 1983, you said.
80. Yeah, he voted for it in 1983, and in 1984 it was implemented. The YouTube videos I have sent, they have all this information. There is a table of trust fund data. It shows that. And also the videos show that Clinton created 23 million jobs, and Bush has destroyed 3 million manufacturing jobs, and it gives you the reasons for why.
Right.
Outsourcing is one, and this biggest jump in the small business tax is another.
Yeah, yeah, that makes perfect sense, because in the early 80s or the late 70s, if you went to any strip mall in America, probably 70% of the businesses were locally owned. They were locally owned clothing stores, locally owned restaurants, locally owned video shops, all kinds of stuff. Now you can't find a locally owned company.
Small businesses are the ones that create jobs.
Right.
And big businesses are the ones that are destroying jobs through outsourcing.
Right.
And these are the guys, these friends of small businesses, the Republicans, Reagan, Alan Greenspan, and John McCain, they raised that self-employment tax by 66%, and they are always claiming, we are helping small business, we are helping small business. I can't believe it. This is incredible.
Now, in your article, Bailout, the Crisis Profiteering, your article that you wrote this morning, you say the current problem is not with banks and financial institutions, but in the housing industry, so the remedy should be applied there and nowhere else.
Well, that exactly. So they should bail out, there should be a partial bailout of these harried homeowners, partial in the sense there should be some penalty for reckless borrowing. But there should still be a bailout for the sake of the full economy. And then secondly, bail out only troubled banks. Don't bail out Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and the other investment banks, because they are not the lenders. They are the borrowers, and they have wasted billions of dollars on oil speculation, raised our oil prices, and we are now helping them out.
Right. So what we should be doing is with the small and local banks, certainly, bail them out to the extent that is necessary, and just right across the board, anybody who's got one of these wacko mortgages, we should go in and like Franklin Roosevelt did, basically say, give us your mortgage and we will give you one back that is a fixed 5% rate over 30 years.
That you can afford to pay. And there'll be some penalty. There should always be some penalty for reckless behavior.
Sure.
But still, we should help them. We should bail them out for the sake of the entire economy.
Right. So maybe if this thing goes down in flames in the House of Representatives today, it will lead to a more positive and healthier response, a more systemic and long-term response, because this, it appears to me, is simply going to be a short-term. They're just trying to buy enough time to get to the election.
Well, why election? I told you last time we were, it will buy 2-3 weeks. It's not even buying that much.
Yeah.
500, the Dow is down by 500 points today.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen now? Suppose we have a full-fledged recession in about 2-3 months. They have already used up precious capital of $1 trillion. What are they going to do? How are they going to rescue the rest of the economy?
This is exactly the problem that Franklin Roosevelt had, because Hoover gave away all the money trying to bail out the banks in 1931.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Ravi Batra, RAVIBATRA.com is his website. And if you haven't read his books, Greenspan, Fraud, and the New Golden Age, buy them and check out his YouTube videos. You can go over to YouTube.com and Google Ravi or look for Ravi Batra.
Just Google Ravi Batra.
You'll track him down. Thanks, Ravi.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
You know, it's not pleasant to talk about, but it's one thing that every man over the age of 30 should know about, an enlarged prostate. Prostate enlargement can cause frequent urination and even sexual problems. So between getting up in the middle of the night to urinate and possible sexual problems, an enlarged prostate becomes a giant pain in the... Well, you get the idea. Now, what if I told you there was an all-natural way to help your body keep your prostate healthy? There is. It's called Beta Prostate, and it's an all-natural prostate vitamin. No crazy medications with strange side effects, just a natural supplement that helps maintain your prostate. Beta Prostate has proven ingredients that target and feed your prostate with healthy nutrients. If you're over the age of 30, be proactive in keeping your prostate in good health. Try Beta Prostate risk-free. Call 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Your health is too important to wait, so call now. 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times, offering various prizes to its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you're agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents, at least 18 years old, and may only enter one time unless otherwise stated in the complete official contest rules. Only one prize per household for any contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
If I stay on the res,
I'll be 8 times less likely to drop out of college.
If I stay on the res,
I won't be just another number.
I can learn biology in my native language.
I can use my education to help my people.
If I stay on the res,
I'll be more likely to transfer to a university.
6 times more likely.
If I stay on the res,
there's a 9 in 10 chance I'll finish college.
And I will finish college.
I will learn about the old ways so my culture will live on.
I will make my parents proud.
I'll make my people proud.
Our history will not be forgotten.
If I stay on the res,
I can get a quality education.
At a tribal college.
At a tribal college.
If I stay on the res.
If I stay on the res.
If I stay on the res.
To learn more about the nation's tribal colleges and how they're helping Native American people and the reservations, contact the American Indian College Fund at collegefund.org or call 1-800-776-3863. The American Indian College Fund, educating the mind and spirit.
Like most parents, you probably see your child as the typical smart, well-adjusted kid.
Camouflage. C-A-M-O-U-F-L-A-G-E. Camouflage.
Well, your child might not be as well-adjusted as you think.
Issues. I-S-S-U-E-S. Issues.
And if you knew there was somebody in particular who could help your child?
Daddy. D-A-D-D-Y. Daddy.
Wouldn't you want them to help? Well, the truth is, Dad, you're that person. Just by being an involved dad and spending time with your child, you're taking an active role in your child's social and emotional well-being. You're also increasing their chances of succeeding academically and staying in school. So don't take for granted how normal and smart your child seems.
Balance. B-A-L-A-N-C-E. Balance.
Because children need fathers who love and care for them just as much as they need mothers. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative, 100 Black Men of America, and the Ad Council. Call 1-800-790-DADS for free helpful information.
Some people would call him a loser. He ran for state office. He was beaten. He started a business. He failed. He ran for Congress. He lost. He was nominated for vice president. He lost again. But he knew only those who never tried are the real losers. And Abraham Lincoln was no loser. Persistence. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
He knew your
Earth was dying. If they said this on the news, if they would clarify the picture instead of seeking to confuse. You could see the ice caps melting. If you could watch the oceans rise, you could see the consequences right before your eyes. If you knew the kids were dying, if you could look inside the river where their food comes from, filled with cyanide. If you could hear the parents pleading, if they were looking right at you, if you could see the anguish in their hearts. What if you knew?
21 minutes past the hour. Your last chance to get over to airamerica.com and post on our blog today. We'll be passing it. We'll be giving out a free copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, a book I wrote about 2-3 years ago that I think is one of the best histories of American democracy that I've written anyway. Right now, our labor segment for the week. Dennis Van Rockel is with us. He's the newly elected president of the NEA, the National Education Association, NEA.org, the website. And Dennis, am I pronouncing your last name right?
It's Van Rockel.
Van Rockel. Thank you very much. My apologies. The NEA is, you know, one of the really solid and stable unions in the United States, and doing a marvelous job with education all across this country and fighting for education. And yet it's also one of the institutions, one of the unions that is the most commonly vilified by right-wing radio talk show hosts and people looking for cheap shots. What are your goals as the new president of the NEA?
Well, my goals as the new president of NEA are clearly defined based on NEA's mission and vision. We spent the last 5 years as an organization really looking at ourselves, saying, where is it that we need to be? What do we need to do to be successful in the future? The world around us has changed a lot, and we know we must change too. But where we're going is very clear for us. Our vision is very simply stated, a great public school for every student. And although it sounds so simple, it's never been achieved, not even in America, a great public school for every student. So we see our mission, our purpose for existence, is to obviously advocate for the professionals who work there, mm-hmm. but also to unite our members and the nation, because we believe in fulfilling the promise of public education for every student in America. It means a lot to me, and it means a lot to this organization, and that's where we're headed.
I'm curious what your thoughts are. The next presidential debate is going to be October 15th, and it's supposed to focus on domestic policy. What are the education issues that are basically policy issues, that are the kinds of things that presidents will be deciding having an influence over?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest policy issues that will face the next president is the reauthorization of the Elementary Secondary Education Act, more commonly known as No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. The reauthorization was actually up during this current Congress, but there's no way they'll take action on it. So the next president will have the honor of being there while that's done. And, you know, the bully pulpit is a very important piece talking about where is it that America needs to go in education. 70% of the American people say we're going in the wrong direction. The new president's going to have a lot of responsibility for defining that new direction, the right direction for America. And included in that, I believe, a huge piece is where are we going in terms of public education.
Jim Jeffords, the Republican member of the U.S. Senate from Vermont, was one of my two senators when I lived in Vermont. And he left the Republican Party over No Child Left Behind. And I had a conversation with him and then actually wrote it into a book on equal protection. Some of the research that he shared with me that indicated that the principal outcome of No Child Left Behind would be to transform a $150 to $200 million a year testing industry, private corporate testing industry, into a $1 billion private corporate testing industry. And that has happened,
absolutely,
as he predicted. How do we, if you're advocating keeping No Child Left Behind, how do we turn it into something that's more than just that?
Well, what we're advocating is a major overhaul of that last version, because we do not believe in the test, label, and punish formula. We do not believe in the high-stakes single test. It's absolutely wrong for students. It's wrong for education. It's wrong for America.
Why don't we just deep six this thing? I mean, I remember when I was a kid in school, teachers made the tests on the local Mimeo machine. You know,
Well, there's much of No Child Left Behind, Title I and so on, that is very important that we have. But there are provisions within No Child Left Behind that definitely have to be taken out of there, overhauled, and the testing mania is one of those.
Yeah.
What we have to do is to figure out a way for the federal government to play a real partnership with states. Most education policy and resources come from the state. And there used to be a real balance between the federal role and the state, and I believe No Child Left Behind really tipped the balance, gave federal a role in defining the test and the punishments, and that just is an inappropriate role. But there is an important role for the federal government. One would be in research. We need far more research done to really measure student learning and make sure that our standards are set for the 21st century and not looking backwards.
Right. Another one might be infrastructure.
Absolutely.
We have schools falling apart across the country in a lot of communities, particularly as this economy goes south, and in particularly in those areas where all the jobs have been offshored to Asia. They can't afford to rebuild schools that are falling apart or are full of asbestos or whatever.
Just today I was at a luncheon and I was listening to he's a superintendent of a small district in rural Ohio in the Appalachia. And in his career, he grew up there in the rural community and got college education, became a superintendent in one of the wealthiest districts in Ohio, and now he's back in this rural area, and he said he's more angry today than he's ever been about the discrepancy between resources.
Yeah, and that's something that really only the federal government can address. Dennis Van Roekel, the newly elected president of the National Education Association, the NEA, NEA.org is their website. Dennis, good luck, your president.
Well, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Good luck. Thank you for being with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620, KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620, KPOJ.
Leaders are a pain in the neck. Can't hold a candle to Chiang Kai-shek. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Then the bombers are afraid of a fight. Peace hurts business and that ain't right. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Daily News, Daily Blues.
Well, the Daily News. The bailout fails in the House of Representatives. The vote is closed. The Dow's down more or less 500-600 points. Everybody seems to be hysterical about it. I am not. Frankly, the fact that after the thing failed and the Dow more or less stabilized says to me that, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's just not. I mean, you know, clearly something needs to be done. It doesn't need to be done today. And, you know, you got Warren Buffett saying, God help us. Well, Warren Buffett's got $5 billion that he's proposing to invest or maybe has already committed to invest into Goldman Sachs. So, well, you know, it's like if Goldman Sachs has a problem, well. And, of course, Paulson, you know, is the former CEO of Goldman Sachs and Robert Rubin, a former CEO of Goldman Sachs. I think, as Ravi Bacher said, Goldman Sachs is the problem. And we got to wake it up. So. Our alert for the day, our shotgun wedding alert. Yep, it would be fantastic. Oh, my poor Levi, dragged to the altar by the campaign, political campaign. This is pretty straightforward. This is from the Times of London. In an election campaign notable for its surprises, Sarah Palin, the Republican vice presidential candidate, may be about to spring a new surprise. The wedding of her pregnant teenage daughter to her ice hockey playing fiancé before the November 4th election. Inside John McCain's campaign, the expectation is growing that there will be a popularity boosting pre-election wedding in Alaska between Bristol Palin, 17, and Levi Johnson, 18, her schoolmate and the father of her baby. It would be fantastic, said a McCain insider. You'd have every TV camera there. The entire community would be watching. It would shut down the race for a week. Yeah. And you can get on over to airamerica.com and comment on our blog for the day, and I will be announcing in the next segment the winner of We the People, our 130-page illustrated. How many pages is this exactly? It's 200 pages. Holy cow. 200-page illustrated history of democracy in the United States. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. By yours truly. 36 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, your telephone number, Bill in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Bill.
This Is this Bill in Phoenix you're talking
to? It is, and you're on the air, Bill.
Cool. Hey, I put this up on your blog also, but there's something that really concerned me about this whole relationship that FDIC and the Fed have with J.P. Morgan Chase. You know, in the Bear Stearns bailout, the Fed loaned J.P. Morgan $30 billion, and it feeds into what's going on right now with WaMu and this whole bailout. They loaned Bear Stearns, or loaned J.P. Morgan $30 billion to pick up Bear Stearns.
Right.
And the reason that they did that was because JPM had written a whole lot of the BSC, of the Bear Stearns credit default swap contracts, and had Bear Stearns failed, Morgan would have had, like, losses in tens of billions of dollars.
Right. Now, let me just translate this into English for our listeners. Bear Stearns had written basically guarantees, these credit swaps. In other words, they had betted that the credit that Morgan was holding would not fail. And they, and which is like, you get the problem with the credit, then you get the problem with the bets on the credit. And had Morgan failed, Bear Stearns would have been hit with having to pay off those bets, basically, and they would have failed too. So by loaning the money to Bear to buy Morgan,
it's the reverse of that, Tom. They loaned the money to Morgan to buy Bear.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And by loaning the money to Morgan to buy Bear, okay.
Okay. So let's expand this a little bit. So you look at this WaMu thing that just happened, which by the way, you know, a lot of people have been saying is illegal because even in the OC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency's letter approving this deal, this still has to be cleared and approved of by WaMu's board of directors. We don't know that that's happened yet.
Right,
it would be very much of a stretch to figure out that the board of directors would approve the complete wiping out of all of their shareholders' common stock, which is what happened as a result of this deal. But you look at WaMu,
right.
they had $300 billion-plus in assets, $250 billion in deposits, 2,600 banking locations, and a total asset base that support valuing their stock someplace between $7 and $10 a share, and yet they get wiped out, the shareholders get nothing. Well, why did that happen? It's pretty easy to understand why J.P. Morgan would be interested in furthering their expansion in the commercial banking business, which is more stable than this really heavily leveraged investment banking house of cards that they've built. One of your earlier callers mentioned that the derivatives thing is what's really driving this whole bailout. It's not just the mortgage crisis. It's not just the housing. It's about derivatives. And J.P. Morgan Chase has almost $91 trillion in derivative exposure out there right now. I mean, if they lost 10% in their derivative exposure, it would completely wipe out their entire asset base. So they're really concerned about how they're hanging out there in the wind right now. And the reason that they're interested in further expansion of the banking business is because the retail banking business is actually a lot more solid, right?
Right.
So we never saw any of the details about any of the other bidders, so-called bidders, Wells Fargo, Citibank, and others, on WaMu. They wipe this thing out, so J.P. Morgan gets this infusion of cash and assets to keep them going, and the media once again buys into this sham story of JPM CEO Jamie Dimon coming in and rescuing yet another failing financial institution. Newsflash, folks, JPM has no choice but to keep saving its failing competitors, because even if they continue to borrow money from more taxpayers to do it, if they don't do that, then the biggest loser, if their competitors or their co-conspirators in this whole derivatives business tank, the biggest loser is going to be JPM.
Right. And this goes back to the point that I made last Tuesday about the fact that there's $1,000 trillion worth of derivatives out there, according to the Bank for International Settlement. That's a quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives. There's not that much money in the world. There's
no.
I mean, you know, this is we're talking monopoly here.
And guess what? Did you happen to notice what the Federal Reserve just did this morning?
Yeah, $600 billion they dropped into the credit markets.
Yeah, they increased the swap authorization limits with Bank of Canada, Bank of England, Bank of Japan, Denmark, European Central Bank, Norway Bank, Reserve Bank of Australia, and the Bank of Sweden, and the Swiss National Bank to $620 billion from $290 billion.
Right. Right. And there's speculation that one of the reasons may be that the Bank of China is cutting back on their willingness to participate in those markets.
Sure.
And, you know, because that was reported last Thursday in the South Asia Morning Post, I think the Hong Kong newspaper. And that's got a lot of people nervous, because if China, you know, pulls out of the U.S. or the U.S., the interrelated U.S. and European credit markets, then you got a real freaky problem.
Yeah.
But for the Fed to be dumping that kind of money, I mean, they're basically having to print it. I mean, we're again looking at inflation.
Exactly right. And the biggest losers in all this stuff are not the banks. We all know that. It's just the WaMu thing is a perfect example. What's going on right now with Wachovia is going to be the same thing, possibly. It's the individual taxpayers and the shareholders who get left holding the bag. I mean, they literally wiped out people who had hundreds of thousands, individual taxpayers who had hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in WaMu stock, including tens of thousands of WaMu employees.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how many pension funds were heavily invested in that, and you know it's like
lots of them, because if you look at WaMu's at their position, yes, they had bad loans on their books. All of the major U.S. banks do, but they had an asset base, and they had a money machine with the retail banking branches that JPM's been trying to get more of for some time now.
Right. I think that what we're seeing is disaster capitalism on steroids. We're seeing the big fish eating up everybody else around them, and at the same time they're trying to hold together this house of cards that they constructed as a result of deregulation and Graham, you know, Phil Graham's little contribution in 99.
You're absolutely right. I appreciate your time. Great show.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Bill. Good to hear from you. Whew. Andy in Los Angeles. Hey, Andy, what's up?
Hey, you know, you were talking about framing the debate earlier. And, you know, when I think of all political debates, I you know, it's good to think about the biggest frame possible. It simplifies things.
Mm-hmm.
And the frame that I like to think of, myself at least, is the fact that we're not fighting against people, whether Wall Street or in some little subsection of humanity, but we're fighting against an idea. And the idea that I like to label as being the opponent is institutional extremism.
Mm-hmm.
When someone puts the needs and interests of institutions, whether they're banking institutions or political Republican Party institutions, whatever have you, above those needs, above the needs of people, the interests of people, of humanity, the essence of inhumanity, of human racism exists in that extremism.
Yes.
And all of the debate can be, I think, boiled down from that very simple Einstein.
I think so, Andy, and that's why I wrote the book Unequal Protection, and it's also in We the People about how corporations have claimed human rights. I mean, this goes back to this 1886 Supreme Court case, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, where the clerk of the court inserted a footnote which did not actually reflect the ruling that said corporations have the rights of humans. They have human rights under the 14th Amendment. And now you've got corporations claiming the Fourth Amendment rights of privacy, the Fifth Amendment right not to testify in an incriminatory fashion, the First Amendment right of privacy, the 14th Amendment right against discrimination. And they were never intended to have these rights. They were never intended. Corporations are not people. They can live forever. They can aggregate wealth forever. They can own their own. They're not people.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com. Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money. It's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Attention, truth seekers.
What's been the result here, truth seekers? Huh?
The Mike Malloy Show.
As the nation says, nothing but obvious failures have been the result. A crashing economy.
A rotting infrastructure.
A failed war. A less safe world.
It's Mike Malloy.
More Americans saying their nation is on the wrong track at any time since pollsters started measuring.
Evening, 8 to 11.
The conservative movement.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
There are lots of ways to talk to GEICO. One of the best ways is face-to-face. After all, sometimes you just want to sit across from someone you trust, tell them what you need, and together figure out what works best for you. That's why there's a local GEICO office close by. So come in, sit down, and let's talk. Of course, if your hair's up in curlers or something, we can always do that face-to-face thing over the phone.
Call or visit your local GEICO office today. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
We inherited this business from our father.
Who got it from his father?
Who got it from...
It doesn't go back that far.
Anyway, we are now the custodians of the family legacy.
And all the worries that go with it.
We knew we needed an emergency preparedness plan to protect the business should the unexpected occur. So we went to Ready.gov.
Yes, Ready.gov.
And this is serious. At Ready.gov, we found information that would help get us up and running after an emergency.
Like a flood, cyber attack.
Yeah. Fire-breathing dragon.
We thought creating a plan would cost a lot of money, take a lot of time,
cause a lot of family fights.
But at Ready.gov, we downloaded free checklists, templates, and more. With a solid plan in place, we worry less about keeping Rizzo and Sons in business.
Only it should be Rizzo and Grandsons.
And granddaughter.
Yeah, granddaughter.
Go to Ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Ready.gov. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and this station.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But we can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play.
That would be me. Talk radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you. So Rob Sheridan has won our copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. He says in his blog post, in his post on our blog, we are in desperate need of smart, well-read, well-educated, thoughtful, intelligent, and dare I say sensitive leadership. Those people are rare. We shouldn't resent the best and brightest. We should draft them into service once they have satisfied us that they are worthy of our trust. Lately, when it comes to offerings from the right, I expect their responses to important and relevant questions to sound like, well, I don't know much about that, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night. Well said. Thank you, Rob, and congratulations. We'll get a book off to you with a special personalized signature in it. 866-303-2270. Our telephone number. Gerald in Burbank, California. Hey, Gerald.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
Tom, you on?
You are on the air.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Very proud to be in your show. I'll make three quick points, and I'll get off the phone because I know you're running out of time. First off, I called Biden's office last Monday and warned him basically about Sarah Palin possibly being wired up for the debate.
Mm-hmm.
She always wears her hair up. If she wears it down, she's a former sports broadcaster. She's very used to talking with a wire in her ear.
Right. What's called an IFB in the business.
Yeah, yes, sir. Second point, I believe all this bailout and all this housing problem was planned. If you look at the series of events, first there was the eminent domain law change, then there was the bankruptcy law change, then there was the these things with the housing started somewhere around 2002, 2003. A lot of them had a five-year balloon to begin with. Well, 2003 plus 5 years is election year, and now it's possible a lot of these people won't be able to vote because they can't find them. You know, when you move, you got to re-register.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, the Republican Party in many states, is particularly the states that are hard hit by this, are using the foreclosure rolls as part of their caging, part of their purging the vote lists. Good point, Gerald. Whether or not it was done as a conspiracy from the get-go, you know, I'm kind of doubtful. I think that this was, you know, just people making out as well as they could. I really think that the Republicans did not want this economic disaster to go down until after the election. And they expected a Democratic win. And so if it went down after the election, they could say, see what happens when you elect a Democrat? The economy goes to hell in a handbasket. That's my humble opinion. Marilyn in Florida. Hey, Marilyn.
Hi. Thank you so much, Tom. I'm so glad that that bill didn't pass. I am so glad. I agree
with you.
Yeah,
me too.
And I got to tell you, if they think the American public will not survive, they're wrong, and I'll tell you why. I lost my job in June. My husband is disabled. He can't get disability from the government. We're on food stamps that don't last a month, but we're surviving because the American public are strong.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, can one of those guys on Wall Street be me for a week?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You know, I mean, I'm there, and I'm surviving because it's what we do. If they think we can't do this, we're not capable, they should not underestimate our intelligence.
You're right.
I mean, I agree with you. They're trying to panic us. I wish they wouldn't. But I would like to see one of them be me. I don't even want to trade places. I don't want to be in that category.
Yeah.
But I just want them to But it can be done. We're going to survive.
Yeah, we will. We'll make it through. We always have. Marilyn, thank you. Very, very well said. Very eloquently said. Stan in Shell Beach, California. Hey, Stan, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I really appreciate your show. You're the smartest voice out there. The comment that I had to make is there are other things other than the mortgage debt that is the real problem with the economy. One is the personal or credit card debt. And we've seen a lot of usury and predatory lending in that as well as the mortgage.
Yeah, when Bush came into office, the average credit card debt in the United States was around $2,500. Now it's over $7,000. When Reagan came into office, the average credit card debt in the United States was under $1,000. As I recall, it was $300 and change. You're absolutely right.
You add to that the national debt, which I think is somewhere around $90,000 per person.
Yep.
And then deficit spending on top of that. Say, do you know who Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee is?
Quite well, yeah. She's been on the program, in fact.
Well, she did a documentary back last year in Debt We Trust.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of that?
Is this the one that's all over YouTube?
I have no idea. It's instead of In God We Trust, In Debt We Trust.
Right.
And it's America Before the Bubble Burst. And it goes into great detail, this economic meltdown that we're in right now. She was running around Congress with her hair on fire,
yeah.
And nobody was listening to her or paying any attention to her. The last caller brought up the changes in the bankruptcy law, and this documentary goes into that in detail as far as how that impacts the economy. People, with the predatory lending and the usury, they're just overloaded with debt, and it's the poor people who are the most likely to get caught up in that.
Yeah.
The website for this documentary, I've got a copy of it in my hand here. It's www.disinfo.com, D-I-S-I-N-F-O.
Yeah, there's a ton of great information at that website, by the way. Stan, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Daryl in Seattle, we got about 30 seconds before we have to wrap the show.
Yeah, I've been waiting for 3.5 hours, too. But I want to tell you that when John McCain said that Barack Obama didn't know the difference between a strategy and a tactic, well, my sister-in-law just looked it up in the Funkin Wagnalls dictionary. There is no difference.
Oh, really?
There is no difference whatsoever.
A tactic is a strategy, and a strategy is a tactic?
Yes. They're both military terminology.
Yeah, I think that that what he meant was micro and macro. But interesting point, Daryl. Thank you for sharing it with us. And good to hear from you.
Very, very interesting. Coming up tomorrow, I'll confront Republican Uber strategist Ralph Reed, author of Dark Horse, about his thoughts on the current McCain camp strategy, and maybe we'll find out if his $4 million in Abramoff payments worked for him on Wall Street. Plus, I'll challenge Republican strategist and former senior campaign advisor to Mitt Romney, Barbara Comstock, the Workforce Fairness Institute, about the Employee Free Choice Act. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there. Get active. Have a great day.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.